Welcome to a new episode of Becoming a Post-Growth Planner, Obstacles and Challenges to Changing Roles and Practices. My name is Christian Lamker. I'm assistant professor at the University of Groningen in the Netherlands. And now in January 2026 and moving closer to celebrating almost 10 years of the term and concept of post-growth planning, it's a very special honor for me to welcome one of the long-standing key figures in the debate, especially in Central Europe. And therefore, welcome to Christian Schulz from the University of Luxembourg.
Thank you, Christian, for having me.
Yeah, you started quite early to search for the spatial dimensions of post-growth economies. For example, in 2020, you had the German-edited volume Post-Growth Geographies, also translated to English a year later. But looking a bit back, what has brought you personally into these debates, and why do you see the need to also foster them in your own disciplines?
Yeah, what brought me to these debates actually is that I started working on sustainability in the economic context, looking at manufacturing firms primarily in the 1990s, from a rather green economy, ecological modernization perspective. And at the time, I must admit, I've been very hopeful that things will change fundamentally with all the incentives provided, new regulation in place, environmental reporting being established and the like. And it took me maybe a decade or so, maybe a bit longer, realized that those changes were by far not fundamental, but at best incremental, if not rolling back in some sectors, which always brought me back to the question of finite resources of the growth paradigm at large. We're going to discuss in more detail in a minute. And I then shifted more and more towards more critical approaches towards the notion of the green economy. And by that, I was probably among the first geographers problematizing the post-growth debate in our discipline.
Yeah, and with all the background in economic and geography, economic geography, sustainable finance, and so on, what is the trigger you want to achieve with your work?
Regarding my discipline, economic geography and beyond, I realized to what extent our textbooks, our concepts, even our methodologies are implicitly, at least, bound to a belief in continuous growth. So the underlying paradigm, the vocabulary we use and the like is rather unreflectedly deployed. And the growth paradigm, so to say, is taken for granted by many. And this probably was my starting point to geared towards more critical reflection in our discipline as to what kind of spatial development, for example, we argue for.
Yeah, we are now looking a bit back. We will also later in this talk look a bit more towards the future. But we have been in contact around post-growth economies, post-growth planning already for many years now, among others also at the Dortmund Conference 2020, just before the COVID-19 lockdown, where you summarized that post-growth planning for me means not only questioning the notion of growth as such, but also challenging our established concepts, methods, indicators, and not least, terminology. That's already almost 6 years ago. Looking back at these 6 years, how far have we gone further with this challenge? Where, how does it help now to have this post-growth debate? Where does it get more recognized in economic geography, spatial planning?
Thank you. My observation is a bit ambivalent. On the one side, I see that the term has been quite established in broader debates and is even adopted by people who not necessarily adhere to the post-growth approach or its underpinning conceptualization. So it's out there, if you like, in the scholarly debate and beyond. And at the same time, I see little progress as to an actual understanding of what's behind this term. This is probably best reflected by the way how colleagues, but also policymakers and journalists, intentionally or unintentionally misunderstand the term post-growth or degrowth, which is often used interchangeably. So blaming the term for being anti-growth and anti-economic development and progress is a misinterpretation which does a lot of harm to a more honest debate.
Yeah, you've done a lot of work, which I find quite inspiring, to also provide alternatives, show alternatives, and show future pathways, especially within also the German ARL, Academy for Territorial Development in the Leibniz Association. And you more recently headed the working group Alternatives to Prosperity and Regional Development since 2021, I think. And the group also finished with a book publication. What is the key message from this that you want to put forward? Which alternatives did you recognize or do you see most crucial?
I think there's two things we wanted to show in the book, and we hopefully managed to show. The one is that material wealth is something different from individual well-being, and that there's many other notions of well-being that are less bound to material consumption, ever-growing material consumption. The second is that by looking into local and regional case studies, pioneering initiatives, we wanted to show how this other understanding of well-being can be established, implemented, and also widely accepted by these. And there we looked into cases in mainly Austria and Germany, where we found quite remarkable initiatives ranging from local time banks over renewable energy initiatives to all sorts of non-market trade and exchange, primarily contributing to solidarity within the community, local or regional level, which we found very promising.
Yeah, in this podcast, we've been trying to see a search for obstacles and challenges to changing roles and practices also more widely beyond single great examples, good examples at a local neighborhood scale or in specific places. I can imagine that discussions in the working group also unveiled quite some tensions, frictions, what to do with these examples, how to scale up, how they can provide inspiration for new models beyond single cases. How would you summarize these tensions, or what is maybe most promising way to move forward from there?
I wouldn't say tensions or frictions, but you're right. We had debates, and primarily around terminology, and not in the sense of an academic debate, what's the best term to coin a certain phenomenon, more the recognition that, as indicated earlier, the terms post-growth and degrowth may lead to misunderstandings, and that many of the initiatives we looked at, they practice post-growth-oriented approaches without naming it that way. It was quite remarkable. So to find a wording that's maybe more accessible, sounds less dogmatic or conceptual, which can bring together people from very different areas around a tangible idea for change. I think that's the most obvious outcome and has led to discussions within our team to think more critically about the term post-growth and maybe combine it with other attributes. The second is a debate which is out there for quite some time as to how to scale up those pioneering initiatives, which admittedly tend to be romanticized in some contexts and maybe overrated their transformative potential. And here we clearly saw that scaling up is not about growing necessarily or scaling up from the local level to superior levels, local initiative becoming a national movement or the like. It's more about a horizontal scaling up in the sense of replicating. And replicating doesn't necessarily mean copy-pasting a successful initiative and transposing it to another context, which rarely works, but to adapt and to learn from replication to replication, and by that further develop the approach. I think that's something we see in many realms. That's quite and promising at the time.
Yes, we are already dealing with these discussions for quite a couple of years. Do you see at least starting points for these horizontal developments for replicating, for adapting, happening to a bit more wider degree or more connections between these initiatives happening?
Yeah, the connections are there, as many of these initiatives, they organize themselves in networks, loose networks, or umbrella organizations. The probably most tangible example for that replication, and that's not new, is local renewable energy initiatives producing renewable energy in local cooperatives or forms of organizations that contribute to also the regional or local value generation in economic terms. But we see similar phenomena in the realm of sharing. And here I think the actual and transformative sharing, not the so-called pseudo-sharing and platform economies such as Uber and Airbnb or the like. So sharing becoming an infrastructure in many cities and neighborhoods, including the localities where sharing can take place. I'm currently involved in a new Interreg project looking at so-called access hubs in the Benelux, Ireland, France, and Germany as being a recognized infrastructure, socially speaking, but also in terms of environmental aims. And it's quite impressive to see how those, we call it libraries of things, go beyond the usual suspects and include more and more realms.
Nice example. Yeah, we often talk about specific examples. We also had the term local now a couple of times, or neighborhood. On the other side, the term region runs throughout a lot of your work. Why is thinking in regional perspective still or even more crucial for you? And how can a regional development perspective then also advance post-growth thinking as such?
Yeah. So just to avoid misunderstandings, and using the term region, I don't want to limit it to the regional level, and it's not a romanticized idea of regionalism as being the solution. It's more, it's maybe for two reasons. The one is that many of those initiatives we talked about, they started in a rather local niche and probably got some regional scope. So that's the primary scale we look at, empirically speaking. At the same time, if you think about value chains, if you think about how production organization might change in view of a post-growth orientation, like the building sector, for example, if you think of regional sourcing of building materials, most of the spatial implications of those changes, they will occur within a regional context, and by that are fascinating topics for geographers to study.
How do you see that, especially in the context of Luxembourg, with a lot of very close cross-border connections into different neighboring countries? How do you apply or regional thinking in that context in particular?
Yeah, of course, we automatically think beyond the borders when doing regional case studies in Luxembourg, inevitably. Many of those initiatives are connected or at least communicating across the border. But more importantly, Luxembourg is an economy which is very much marked by people moving to the country or commuting to the country on a daily basis. But that automatically, we get a lot of input from outside, and also expats coming from, let's say, Spain or the UK, settling in Luxembourg, starting initiatives they knew from their home countries or their home cities, and by that having some impetus on what's going on. So it's a fascinating context for these activities, and put it simply, there's more to study in Luxembourg than the financial sector.
Yeah, I find it quite fascinating if different countries, national systems, cultures, traditions, and even languages come together and are able to develop something different in there and also materialize that.
Okay.
But for the another part, I want to move a bit more towards the role of spatial planning as such, and maybe the potential key role of spatial planning in a post-growth transformation. If I look back again at the conference roundtable that we had 6 years ago, we talked about tensions between common good-oriented activities and the task of spatial planning. I quote, to conceive and provide suitable infrastructures, buildings, and other framework conditions for new lifestyles and new ways of production and consumption. So quite a wide task for spatial planning, also quite ambitious. How far would you say can or maybe should spatial planning seek for alternative ideas and also pre-think, engage with radically new future models?
If you like, spatial planning or spatial planning approaches to me are also an expression of more general ideas or paradigms or light builder as to regional economic and societal development. And if a transformation is sought for, I think that spatial planning will play a crucial role in helping to implement such transformations. And I may give three examples, and this is by no means meant to be a comprehensive or exhaustive list of activities. So maybe most tangibly, the way how buildings are conceived and how neighborhoods are planned and the uses in a neighborhood are planned very much preconditions the activities that can happen. And if you think of a closer relationship between work, so paid work, unpaid care work, and other activities in families' daily lives, and integration of infrastructures such as childcare with co-working spaces, a combination of those maybe in the same building, preconditions, material preconditions planning can cater for. At a maybe more regional urban level, I think the way how, let's say, zoning of activity zones takes place and what kind of flexibility in a more long-term perspective, what kind of flexibility is enabled by the way how such zones are conceived, what kind of buildings are erected, what kind of, to what extent those buildings can be reused for other activities if a certain activity runs out. All these reflections, I think, should be reconsidered when applying traditional tools such as zoning. And a third, and related to this, there's a fascinating debate in architecture and beyond about prioritizing the reuse, the renovation and reuse of buildings over the new construction. This is an initiative called House Europe, you're probably aware of, and others very much arguing for stopping to demolish buildings and to reconsider to what extent existing buildings can be refurbished, reused in the interest of lower resource throughput.
Yeah, to deal with these questions, I think you have quite a valuable and maybe one of the best backgrounds with knowledge in sustainable finance, economic geography, to also think more about the key question that I think runs through many debates, how much is actually possible by changing practices, by changing how we deal with buildings, for example, in the existing ways, the tools that we have available, and where is basically systemic change required first to then at least be able to do something different. How do you see this tension with your background? Do you see some courage to move on in one or the other way, or how do they influence each other?
I think what's missing at the moment, and that comes back to the sometimes deliberate misunderstanding of the notion of post-growth, is that we, at least in the countries I know, we lack an honest debate about the growth paradigm and alternatives to that. And we have a very critical debate in the post-growth camp, if you like, about the growth paradigm, and we have kind of an allergic rejection of post-growth thinking in other areas, orthodox economists, conservative policymakers, and the like. And we have little dialogue between those two camps, even though either side would acknowledge that there's some middle ground to explore, and maybe a necessity to agree upon. What gives me a little hope is that we have discussions about concepts related to post-growth, again, without being coined as explicit post-growth approaches. I think of the donut economy. I think of the notion of planetary boundaries, which is definitely accessible to a broader public and easier to communicate than the abstract conceptual notion of post-growth, maybe threatening some. And so the the idea, I think, would be to use those more and more established instruments, monitoring schemes such as the donut, to convey the underlying idea of post-growth necessity without polarizing the debate towards a concept which is suspected to be ideological, even though it might not be the case.
So dig a step deeper maybe there. Where do you see the hope that by getting one step, by making maybe a small change, changing part of the existing instruments, thinking in the donut, that a first step triggers the next one? What gives you hope there to say that's exactly the way that can also work? As I see lots of debates also saying that can be easily co-opted, or this first step doesn't necessarily lead to a second or third one in the desired direction.
What I think and what I would hope for is that those concepts also help to show that this kind of post-growth oriented transition always comes with a strong social dimension. And that other than some critics might think when they think of economic decline and a lot of wealth in the first place, that post-growth can very much contribute to more distributional justice within the society, and by that maybe help particular groups of disadvantaged groups of us, which obviously would increase the acceptance of that concept. So if post-growth approaches at the local level, for example, a donut initiative in a given city succeeds in allying a lot of different groups within the society are believing that this transition does good to a community, not to a single sector or the economy alone or the environment alone, I think there's a huge potential. But overall, it's a democratic idea and challenge, and a need for statutory approaches, which are, as you know, far more difficult to implement.
Yeah, I think we've both been part of the democratic challenge over many years also to have these debates within economic geography, within spatial planning. On the other side, also pondering on the conditions that are needed, that are necessary to also foster these discussions at first, but then also to apply some of the thoughts in reality. What do you see as the main conditions that are necessary for spatial planners to have more courage, to have more of these debates, putting steps together?
I sounded more optimistic in my last answer than I'm sounding now, probably. As the more general debates we are having in terms of economic policies and the like, probably not the most advantageous context for flourishing planning discipline, to put it this way, or a progressive planning approach. And so maybe the context is even more difficult than a couple of years ago. At the same time, there's a necessity to react and to act in many regards, which probably opens opportunities. And the precondition, again, I think, is that, and we have cities who practice that, who have succeeded. And when it comes to the housing policies, for example, and the question of land ownership, where cities have started to really fundamentally change their approaches. And try to get control over local development, but also the social aspects of real estate markets. So there's some hope that I think the context isn't necessarily favorable for this change.
If you summarize, what's the most positive potential for you that that post-growth thinking has to offer? So to end with also a positive line in a few moments.
What gives me hope is how the topic or the concept is adopted by young scholars and students. So I think the number of master theses in many European universities dealing with this topic has tremendously increased over the past years. Interview requests we are receiving from young scholars and students have increased considerably. So I think within the discipline, there's something going on. And if you look at a neighbor discipline, economics, where young scholars challenge orthodox economists and arguing for more plural understanding or pluralistic understandings of the discipline, this is something that gives me hope for the future.
Yeah, I realize also among our students that housing is often quite a trigger when younger generations realize that it's almost impossible even to rent a decent apartment in many cities. And when suddenly post-growth answers seem to be at least offering something different to understand and to also find a way forward than building more, yeah, more.
Definitely the case. Yeah.
So now moving a bit towards the end, we have reflected a lot on quite almost a decade of thinking towards post-growth economies, post-growth planning, post-growth spaces. And we have been using this term for quite a couple of years. And also in the all past episodes of the podcast, we finished with one short sentence, could be a bit of explanation as well, summarizing post-growth planning is:
the main approach to overcome unwanted growth and thus to establish a strong sustainability both in social and environmental terms.
Thanks a lot, Christian. Thanks for joining me today. And many best regards to Luxembourg also for all the work to come in this direction.
Thank you for having me. All the best. Thank you.
Thank you.